It's good to see everybody here. I am exceedingly thankful for the opportunity to come back and to see you. I'm glad that I have the ability to personally tell you that Bonnie and I were extremely touched when we came. We were very thankful for the offer to come and work with you, and it would have been easy to work with you. You're a wonderful congregation, and I think that was by far the hardest choice that Bonnie and I had to make. It was not easy for us to make at all. And since that time, I have been praying for you because you are in my heart. I'll tell you the same thing I told the congregation when I told them I almost left them. I said, I don't want to leave you, and I don't want to not be with you. I want to spend eternity with all of you. That's the goal. That's the desire. So I've been praying for you that God would bless you with somebody to come and work with you. And so finding out that Adam is coming is just an absolute joy for me. It is literally answered prayers, and I hope the absolute best for you. And I hope that you guys will grow and get to a point where this building simply will not fit you. I think that would be great. And I hope that you will grow personally and individually as well. I could spend, I could spend the whole time with greetings and gratitudes. I certainly could. I don't want to do that. I do want to encourage you, though. I know that everybody has busy schedules. If you can make it during the days, during the week, I encourage you to do so. The series on artifacts that matter is fascinating, and it is very encouraging and faith-building. I hope you can make that, and I certainly hope you can make it through the week and the evenings as well. I'm sorry. You are the first congregation I've done this to, and technically you're the first congregation I didn't do this to, but whenever I have delivered this sermon before, I have always handed out nice little pieces of paper to everybody. Of course, that's actually, and I know you can't zoom your eyes in to see this, but this is play money. And I would always put play money in the bulletins, and they come in different increments, $1, $5, $10, $20, $50. One time I even tried to do $1 million ones. Tell you what happened to those. But I would put those in, and it's fascinating. Everybody starts saying, hey, I got a one, and I got $100, and I'm better than you. And it's very fascinating how all that works. And it's a visual representation, and here's the problem. There's more of you this year in this congregation than I have dollars left. And so I decided rather than giving this half something and you guys getting really mad at me, nobody gets any. You don't get any at all. But I want to talk about this idea of this counterfeit play money. And so you just imagine in your hand you have a white piece of paper that says some dollar increment. And what I want to talk about is this idea of fake money to illustrate the spiritual counterfeits that I want to talk about and this morning and indeed this whole week. But the money is very carefully regulated by the government. They have rules about what I could hand you. And there are very careful rules about what qualifies as play money because there's actual real counterfeit money that is out there. And so there are rules like this has to be a different size than this. It has to be a different color than this. It can't be a photocopy of this. It has to put somewhere on there that it is play money. You're not allowed to print on both sides. As I have done this, I've come to realize there's a lot of illegal play money. There's a lot of play money. This one is a photocopy of a dollar. Now, it's the wrong size, but it's a photocopy. This is technically illegal. And then I find a lot of them that have printed on both sides, which would also be illegal. I had a whole stack of $1 million bills that were given to me. And I took them up to Alaska. I put them in my checked luggage. And they did not come out of my checked luggage. The TSA took it. They stole my $1 million, all of them. And the reason why was because they looked real. Now, I don't know what a real $1 million looks like, but they had the same feel, the same texture, the same color, printed on both sides. They were technically illegal. Somebody had given them to me. I thought, this will be a great illustration. And the government said, no, it's not, and took it away from me. Because they can't allow there to be fake money out there. It will ruin the economy. Because it has no real value. I could take this and I could take it to any store and it will not accomplish anything. I won't get anything with that fake money. And it doesn't matter how real it seems, fake money has no value. So here's a picture, a closer picture you can see then of the real dollar and the fake dollar. And that, of course, is play money. And then if you go online, you can find counterfeit money that is not play money. And so here's an illustration of that. And you have two $20 bills. And the way that I know with great clarity that the top one is real and the bottom one is fake is because of that word right there, real and fake. And that's about it. That's about all I have. I was looking very, very closely. I was zoomed in, and I'm pretty sure that what it is right over here, that is different. That was the key way of identifying the difference. So we need to be able to find the fakes, because fake money is not usually going to come to the bank or to the store and say, yeah, so all I have is this counterfeit money. Do you take that? That's not going to happen. It's not going to be written play money on it. And so we have to figure out how to identify it. And most of us can do it just by touch. And if we can't do it, the bankers can. They just go through and they can feel the difference of fake money. And if they can't feel the difference, what you do is you take it and you compare it to a real $20 bill or whatever it is you're looking at. And you look for all the similarities. So there's this quote about this. It's differences, not similarities. Counterfeit bills, if they are any good at all, will be similar to real ones in many ways, but if a bill differs in just one way, it's probably fake. You get the point with this? So I have a fake dollar bill here. I can't say, look, see, it has a one on the corner. Therefore, it's real. I can't say, look, it has George Washington in the middle. Therefore, it's real. You're not looking for all the similarities. You're looking for the differences. That's what tells you it's not real. It's fake. Now, of course, I'm not interested in talking about money. That's not what we're really talking about. What we're talking about is that concept on a spiritual level. And I hope that you get the main concept right there, and that is we're not going out and trying to say, well, look, everybody has the same things. Look, that church over there, they believe in Jesus, and that church over there, they say they believe in Jesus, and that one, they say they believe in Jesus. They're all the same. It's not how you do it. That's like looking at a play piece of money and say, look, it's got George Washington on it, and it's real. You look for the differences. You look for the things that are out of place that make it not real. Now, this is a challenging concept, and I suspect that most of you have this concept already in your hearts and in your mind. But in case you don't, it can be very offensive, very challenging. When I deal with new Christians, it's very challenging for them to understand, wait a second, so you're saying that all these other people I know that are claiming to be Christians, you're saying some of them aren't? They really don't like my answer when I say, no, I'm saying most of them aren't. They don't like that. But we need to understand this. And let's start off with a non-offensive way. Let's start off with the Jews, because most of us aren't Jews. And so we say there's such a thing as a fake Jew, that's not offensive to anybody. But that is something that the New Testament, Jesus, is teaching us, that there's such a thing as fake Jews. So if you look at Revelation chapter 2 and verse 9, Jesus writing in the seven letters to the seven churches says, those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan. Jesus is telling them, these people are telling you they're God's people, they're Jews. And Jesus says, but they're not. They're not Jews. They are servants of Satan. He again says in Revelation 3 and verse 9, say that they are Jews and are not, but lie. Look at Romans chapter 9 and verse 6. Paul in Romans explains that the Israelites, God's people, they're going to be saved. But here's the catch. It is not as though the word of God has failed, for they are not all Israel who are descended from Israel. So he's saying, here's some people that they can trace their lineage back to Abraham. They are Israelite, but they're not. They're not in heart, in substance. They are not really Israelites. They're not really Jews. Or if you go to Romans chapter 2, earlier in the book, Romans chapter 2, verses 28 and 29. He says, for he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that by which is a That is that which is of the heart, by the Spirit, not by the letter, and his praise is not from men, but from God. And so again, here's this idea, not really a Jew. And this isn't unique to the New Testament. Back in the Old Testament, in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 9, verses 25 through 26, we see God again telling them, you've got to be more than just born into a certain family. In Jeremiah chapter 9, verses 25 through 26, it says, behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, that I will punish all who are circumcised and yet uncircumcised. Egypt and Judah and Edom and the sons of Ammon and Moab and all those inhabiting the desert who clip the hair on their temples, for all the nations are uncircumcised and all the house of Israel are uncircumcised of heart. So there it is, the house of Israel. They're circumcised, yes, but he says, not in heart. And so you're not really a Jew. Simple point. Now you can imagine how the Jews felt about that. They were rather offended that Jesus would dare say, you're not one of God's people. You're not a Jew. And that's what he's doing in John chapter 8. In John chapter 8, pretty well-known passage, this is where Jesus says, if you continue in my word, you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. And they say, whoa, make us free. We're not slaves to anyone. And that begins this series of conversations between them and him. And verse 37, he says, I know that you are Abraham's descendants, yet you seek to kill me because my word has no place in you. I speak the things which I have seen with my father, therefore you also do the things which you've heard from your father. They answered and said to him, Abraham is our father. Jesus said to them, if you are Abraham's children, do the deeds of Abraham. But as it is, you are seeking to kill me, a man who has told you the truth, which I heard from God. This Abraham did not do. You are doing the deeds of your father. They said to him, we were not born of fornication. We have one father, God. Jesus said to them, if God were your father, you would love me, for I proceeded forth and have come from God. For I have not even come on my own initiative, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I am saying? It is because you cannot hear my word. You are of your father, the devil. You can imagine that offended them. Did it change the truth? No, but it did offend them. And they were absolutely, absolutely convinced. We won't take the time to read Matthew 23, 29 through 35, but that's where they were saying, you know, if we were alive back in the day, we would have never done any of that stuff to the prophets. We would have lifted them up and praised them and accepted them being from God. And Jesus says, no, you wouldn't have. You're persecuting the prophets now. You would have persecuted them then. You guys are convinced, but you're wrong about who you are. And ultimately what that means then is that they were lost. And that's the real thing. They have no value. They're as valuable as a fake piece of paper. They're not real Jews. So we could look at the various passages that in John chapter 8, they had to be freed. They were descendants of the devil rather than God. They, in Matthew 3, they come to John the Baptist. John is saying, no, no, you guys can't come to me. You don't understand who you are. Don't tell me you're sons of Abraham. God can create those from rocks. You want to know who you are? You are those who are ready to be chopped down by an axe and thrown into the fire. That's your lost sort of statement. And in Matthew chapter 23, in this passage that Jesus just goes after the Pharisees and scribes, the whole thing. He's telling them, you guys are not who you think you are. And then he tells them that you go off and you go so, work so hard to create a proselyte and you make them twice as much sons of hell as yourselves, which says two things. One, you're not saving them. And two, where are they? These Jews, they're not saved. All right, so that's the non-offensive side of things. But there's such a thing as counterfeit Christians. And we're a little different than this. Every analogy falls apart, and this one absolutely falls apart. And here's why. There is nothing I can do to this piece of paper to turn it into this. And there's nothing I can do to this to turn it into this. But when we're talking about counterfeit Christians, that's not true. Because somebody can be a fake Christian, and good news, you can become a real Christian. And the bad news is, somebody can be a real Christian, and you can so live and change that you become a fake Christian. So the analogy is going to fall apart. But, biblically speaking, the Bible wants you to understand this concept. There is absolutely such a thing as fake Christians. Fake religious people. James chapter 1 and verse 26. Here's somebody who thinks that they are religious, but what does he say? James 1 verse 26. He says, if anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. He's a piece of paper. It's nothing. All right? Matthew chapter 7, verse 15, Jesus talks about beware of those who are wolves in sheep's clothing. They appear to be one thing, but they are not sheep. They are wolves. Or Matthew 7, verse 21 through 23, when Jesus is giving us this picture of judgment and so familiar within the church. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And in your name cast out demons? And in your name perform many miracles. And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness. They're calling out, Lord. It makes them Christians, right? But no. He never knew them. They looked like Christians. They thought they were Christians. They claimed to be Christians. They were never actually Christians. They were fake. Or if you look at 1 Corinthians 5, the language that's in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, it's a passage about that man who was living with his father's wife, a rather disgusting scenario. And he's saying, okay, as a church, you guys need to take action. You need to remove yourself from him. And he explains that in verse 9. He says, I wrote you in my letter not to associate with immoral people. I did not at all mean with the immoral people of this world, or with the covetous and swindlers, or with idolaters, for then you would have to go out of the world. But watch what he says now. But actually, I wrote you not to associate with any so-called brother. What interesting language. So called. Is he actually a brother? No. He's chosen a different path. Does he go to church? Yes. Does he claim to be a part of you? Yes. Is he? No. There's such a thing as fake Christians. And on we go. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, false apostles, false workers that are like Satan who appears as an angel of light. Philippians 3, where they make themselves enemies of the cross. Titus 1 and verse 16, they profess to know God, but by their deeds they deny him. 2 Peter 3, 15 through 16, they twist and distort the scriptures to their own destruction. Or 1 John 2, read this one with me. 1 John chapter 2, verses 18 and 19. Children, it is the last hour, and just as you heard that Antichrist is coming, even now many Antichrists have appeared. From this we know that it is the last hour. They went out from us, but they were not really of us. For if they'd been of us, they would have remained with us. But they went out so that it would be shown that they all are not of us. And so he's describing a scenario in which there was a time in which there was a church back then that had people within the church who weren't a part of the church. Now, everybody might have thought they were part of the church, and they were claiming to be part of the church, but he says at some point, they left because they weren't really a part of you, and he calls them Antichrist. Now, I want you to think about what that would mean for today's standards. In most people's beliefs, out in the world and the other churches out there, if you believe in Jesus, you're a Christian. That's all there is to it. You are saved, and you can't lose that salvation. By that standard, the Antichrist were Christians. Because they were part of the church and claiming to be part of the church. And we'll see in other passages later on in the week. They believed Jesus was the Son of God to a degree. They had faith. Well, okay, so we have counterfeit Christians. And you can get the concept now of counterfeit Christians. They're not saved. They're not in good shape. They are lost. So we saw, let's skip that one. Let's look at Matthew 7, 21 through 23. What did Jesus say? Depart from me. I never knew you. They're not saved. They're lost. And they are enemies of Christ. They face destruction. 2 Peter 3, we saw that one, where they're twisting, distorting the scriptures to their own destruction. These people are lost. Isn't that a terrifying concept to you? It is to me. Maybe you'll notice there were two types in here. Two types of fake Christians. Just like there's two types of fake money. There's this where everybody knows it, and there's the kind that people are trying to pass off as real money when it's actually fake. Two types of fake Christians. There are those who absolutely know it. They know that they're fakers. I remember in college, some Some of my friends were calling in this radio program. And they were calling in the radio program to get this teacher of the Bible, supposedly, to talk about baptism. Well, he has a screener. You know, somebody that you have to talk to. And so they would lie to the screener, and I kind of took issue with them. Said, wait a second, you're being Christians who are lying. But they would lie to the screener about why they were calling, and then they'd get on air, and then they'd say, baptism is necessary for salvation. And they were fake callers, right? They weren't honest in their question. They weren't honest in the way they were approaching things. And there are some people who will enter into the church, and they absolutely know they don't belong, and they are there to cause problems. That's definitely true. But then there are those who just don't know it. Did you notice in Matthew 7, verse 21 through 23, when Jesus says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father. For many will say to me, Lord, Lord, and then what do? They argue with him. They try to make their case to the Son of God, to the judge, to Jesus, that they belong in heaven. They are absolutely convinced. And that terrifies me even more. Because that means there's this harsh reality, and that is that there are people out there that think they are saved but are lost, and they might not find out till the day of judgment. There are people out there who think they love God, but in actuality, they hate him. They don't know it. They don't feel it. But they despise what he teaches. They just don't realize it. And then there are people then that think they are following Jesus, but in actuality, they are following Satan. And it is hard, it is so hard to convince somebody of this. You guys see the movie Toy Story, not the new ones, the first one. Are you guys moviegoers, seen Toy Story? It's a movie about toys that come to life. The problem is Buzz Lightyear is a toy that doesn't realize he's a toy. He thinks he's a real space ranger. And so there's this pivotal confrontation in which Woody, a toy, gets in Buzz's face and says, you are a toy. You aren't the real Buzz Lightyear. You're an action figure. You are a child's plaything. Right? Remember how Buzz responds? Buzz doesn't respond and say, you're right. Roll credits. That's not how that movie goes. And it's very much the way reality is. He says, you are a sad, strange little man, and you have my pity. The problem isn't me. The problem is you. And that's what happens. We go to people in the world and we say, look, you're not following God. And they say, the problem is you, not me. They immediately attack us when we're trying to help them. It is so hard to convince people. So hard. Because they are themselves convinced but deceived. They claim to be right. They profess to know God, but by their deeds they deny him. Have you seen that passage? People always talk about saying nice things. And when it comes to religious truths, sometimes we have to be harsh and real. Titus 1, verse 16, they profess to know God, but by their deeds they deny him, being detestable and disobedient and worthless for any good deed. That's some pretty harsh language. They're trying to get through to them. You're not who you think you are. And they expect to be saved. We saw that when they come up to Jesus and they say, Lord, Lord, I'm one of yours. I've done all this stuff for you. So convinced, but wrong. This actually has helped me a lot. Because I'm not that different than everybody else. I look at people that go to denominations and I listen to them, and do they not seem earnest and zealous and convinced? I mean, they've sometimes put us to shame. The way that they are zealous for the things that they are doing, zealous for good work, praying constantly, worshiping and praising. They're doing all these things, and sometimes we're struggling to do those things. They seem really honest, and for some people it becomes hard to accept that maybe they must be Christians because they seem so zealous and they seem so honest. Sincerity has nothing to do with reality. How sincere you are doesn't impact whether you're a real Christian or not. Let me put it to you this way. A bank teller who is on the lookout for fake money is not told to look at the face of the person who's giving them money, but to look at the money itself. They're not looking to see, is this person like sweating? Is this person behaving oddly at all, because they know it's not real money? It doesn't matter whether they know if it's real money or not. What matters is the money. Is it real or not? And so they have to look at the money. This is the really sad thing. You can get counterfeit money from the bank, and it is absolutely worthless, even though you got it from the bank. And so now you're going to another bank, you're going to a store, and you hand them this $20, and they recognize it as fake. They will say, I cannot take this, it's not real. Now you thought for sure it was real. That doesn't make it real. You can even say, well, I got it from the bank. That doesn't make it real. It doesn't fix the problem. It's your $20 fake bill, and you're out. That's reality. Don't like it, but that's reality. All right. So it's very important for us to spot the fake money, because it undermines everything economically. It's very important for us to spot the fake Christians, because that's very significant. There are limitations to that. There are things that I cannot judge about you, and you cannot judge about me. There are things that we do not know, and we've been told to wait until the day of judgment. God will resolve some things. So there are some areas where we just can't know for certain with other people. But it is important for us to spot them when we can, first of all, because they're dangerous. They're dangerous to us. Well, what did Paul say? His very last words in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 20 and 21, says, O Timothy, guard what has been entrusted to you, as avoiding worldly and empty chatter and the opposing arguments of what is falsely called knowledge. That's fake knowledge, which some have professed and thus gone astray from the faith. Grace be with you. Here he says, this is fake knowledge, and if you follow it, you're lost. And those people who have followed it are lost, so it's dangerous. We need to know these things. It's not good for us to just say, everybody's saved. That's not good. We need to know them so we can help them. If on the last day, your neighbors go to the day of judgment, and that's when they find out they're fake, and you've known all along, you have failed your friends. You have failed your neighbor. You did it because you were afraid they were going to attack you. They weren't going to be nice to you. They wouldn't like you. Maybe so. But they sure, certainly won't appreciate you at that moment. And it'll be too late then. But you want to know the real reason? Real reason we need to do this? It's for you and for me. So there were two churches. That's like me beginning once upon a time. Not real. Parable. Two churches across the street from one another. And every Sunday, the preacher in this church got up and preached about how wrong the people were over in this church. And he showed from Scripture all the things that they were doing wrong. And in this church, the preacher got up, and every week he preached about everything that this church was doing wrong, and he showed from Scripture everything they were doing wrong. And the members from this church died, went to hell, and saw one of the members over there and said, ha, 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 I knew it! I knew you were wrong! What good is that? What good is it to know other people are lost if you're lost too? So brothers, I could, from this point on, I could then address this series to the people that aren't here. We could talk about how it's wrong to worship the Pope. We could talk about church structure. We could talk about the work of the church, about edification, benevolence, and evangelism. We could talk about the necessity of baptism and the plan of salvation. All important things, all good things, all things we generally have right. But what good will it do us if on other substantive issues, we're wrong? There will be no joy in heaven if we can point to all the denominations and say, I knew it, I told you guys were wrong, if we're wrong too. And so this series is really about us. It's about me. It's about the threat that I may be one of the fake Christians. And so what he says in 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 10, he challenges us to be diligent. That means to put in all of our effort towards this. Therefore, brethren, be all the more diligent to make certain about his calling and choosing you. Make certain you are truly one of his. That should be one of our daily focuses. And if it's not, what are we doing? We're wasting our time. So that's what this series is going to be. And we're going to talk about several different things in the evening. We're going to talk about real discipleship this evening, Lord willing. We're going to talk about real change, real knowledge, real endurance, real fear. I like that sermon. Not to say I don't like the others. Skip the others. Just go to that one. That's not what I'm saying. But I do like the real fear and real relationship. And it's meant to challenge us. And dare I say, yes, I dare. It's meant to encourage us too. Because I think we can be real Christians. We can be certain of it. And we can go to the day of judgment with confidence if we will approach things properly. So I appreciate your time, your attention, and I hope you'll get the basic concept that counterfeits are a reality and a problem. Jesus worked to show the Jews that they were counterfeits, and then he also, we need to understand that Christians can be counterfeits too, and we need to be on the lookout for them, identifying them, because they need our help. And they also may be us. And so we need help. I appreciate your time and your attention. This is just the introductory sermon. I'm looking forward to the rest. I love these sermons. They're great to talk about and challenge us. If you're not a Christian, we encourage you to become one right now and begin this journey to be closer to God and to be ready to handle the day of judgment and to hear, not depart, but well done. If you're a Christian and you have gone by the wayside, I beg you to come back now. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?